Welcome back to Working Overtime, the advice-focused clavinet to working's Funkadelic. I'm your host, Isaac Butler.
And I'm your other host, Ronald Young Jr. Isaac, what are we talking about today?
So we are going to talk about the inner editor slash critic and when that voice is useful versus when it's time to tell it to S the F U. This topic was suggested by our listener, Bob, who wrote in the following.
So I use the Ken Rand 10% solution method of editing, but I've noticed something that you might want to explore. When I finish a creative work, then go into editor mode, and as the 10% solution says, attempt to murder 10% of whatever I wrote, I usually succeed. But when I'm done and the story is sent off, I turn back to my idea file and prepare for my next project, and nothing. The creative engine is dead, and I struggle to get it going. Editor mode is hard to turn off, and it usually takes a month or two before the creative part of my brain reemerges. This bothers me. I know that some of my favorite books were written on typewriters and published with minimal editing, and now in the age of word processors, grammar checkers, and endless editing and tinkering, the job of editor has integrated with the author. And at least for me, it interferes with the writer part of me. Is this something people have talked about?
First off, Bob, thank you so much for writing in. I have definitely had similar struggles myself. Almost every creative person I know has. Before we dive into the meat of this, Ronald, I know you're not doing like a ton of prose writing as a vocation, but is there a version of the switching between writer brain and editor brain in your creative work?
Absolutely. You know, good podcasting, especially narrative podcasting, includes a lot of writing and editing. But this was actually interesting to me because I edit in rounds. I'll write something and then I walk away from it. Then I come back and I read through the whole thing, make my edits as I read through, and then write new pieces into it again. And that's kind of like how my writing process goes. I'm kind of snapping on writing, snapping on editing, kind of back and forth as I go. But when I'm done writing, like I'm done with whatever that first draft is, I don't even want to look at it anymore. I don't want my own eyes on it. I want to send it immediately to someone else. I think the comparison for me was Bruce Banner versus the Incredible Hulk, meaning at one point you're Bruce Banner, at one point you're Incredible Hulk, but at one point we realize the secret is he's always angry all the time. And that's right. Kind of what I'm realizing is that I'm doing both things as I go, but eventually I just want to get my eyes completely off it and get into the hands of an editor.
You know, one thing as well that's helpful once you've actually recorded something and you're doing that part of the editing with podcasting is usually it's someone else's job. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you know, if you're self-producing, maybe it's your own job, but we're lucky to have Kevin editing this. We have Cameron on the Mothership show. You know, you can actually just do your thing and let them do theirs and then circle back and listen to it. But my version of this with podcasting specifically is that doing podcasts and interviewing lots of people has completely changed me as an interview subject because I know like how quotes can be framed, how things can be edited. There's like a meta part of my brain that's always running. So like I was recently interviewed as like a talking head or whatever for a podcast. It's not going to run live. It's going to be edited with lots of different voices. And so I found myself really self-consciously like pausing in between each point I made so that it was easy to cut, right? Or I'll say to the person like, oh, actually, let me give you a soundbite about that so that you can just put that in here instead of doing this whole paragraph. Like I was editing it for them in my head, which I think could probably be pretty helpful for them, you know, when you're being interviewed. But it is definitely less helpful for the generative part of creative work to always be thinking about what the end product's going to look like.
I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, as a creator and an interviewer, I have run into that issue myself in which I was interviewing someone who had their own podcast. And as I was interviewing her, you know, I kind of had my questions laid out. I knew where I was going in the interview. And she kept stopping and restarting because she was thinking about how I was going to edit it. That is one time when both of those brains being active at the same time is entirely not helpful. Like what we really want in that moment is for you to just be creative, to just talk. And I think what is helpful is the stop starts, like the little points of editing that you think about as you're saying a sentence, restarting a sentence so you have the whole thing, being aware of things like that, that will drive your editor, the person who's actually cutting the tape, crazy if you can fix that. But I think a lot about this kind of the difference between shopping for quality ingredients and actually being in the kitchen cooking. And I think most chefs know what a quality ingredient looks like, but most chefs who are doing the shopping are not always the same chefs who are doing the right. cooking. And if you're not the one in the kitchen doing the cooking, all you can do is drop off those quality ingredients and let somebody else do the cooking. And that's kind of what we do here. And that's kind of like, I think how you could think about it as you're in an interview, trying to drop those good sound bites, drop them, but don't think too much about the editing afterwards.
I know you're a big Top Chef fan, as am I.
Absolutely.
And there's always that episode where they shop to make a dish, or it's a quick fire and they're getting all their ingredients. And then I guess it's Kristen now, but it used to be Padma, would get that glint in her eye and you're like, they're going to have to switch ingredients. They're going to have to go with the ingredients that, you know, a chef with a totally different culinary background picked. And sure enough, that's what happened. So all of a sudden, you know, the vegetarian chef has like pig kidneys to deal with or whatever.
Yeah. Enjoy that.
We'll have more thoughts on Bob's actual questions and how to toggle between editor and creator and get back to your creative projects after this.
Hey, listeners, do you have any tips or questions about the creative process? Get in touch and share your advice. You can email us at working@slate.com, or even better, you can call us and leave us a message at 304-933-9675. That's 304-933-WORK.
And we're back. Ronald, I want to start by saying that I think there's actually kind of two different things Bob is asking about, one of which is less about editing and the inner critical voice and more just about getting back into creative work when you've finished a project. Because part of what he might be experiencing as a block is actually just the creative gas tank being empty. And for me, I know personally, the easiest way to solve this problem is to spend some time taking art in, you know, watch movies, read books, go to the museum, and also spending some time kind of like in your life, you know, because often on a big creative project, especially, you're kind of ignoring the rest of your life. So, you know, get coffee with a friend, or, you know, take the dog on an extra long walk or whatever it is. And then I personally find that the urge, maybe even the need to create, returns. And then it's much easier to work. And you just have to kind of have faith that that's going to happen. Is that your experience? What do you do when your tank's a little empty?
You know, I do the exact same thing. Everything you listed, you kind of just took the words right out of my mouth. And I 100% agree. That's exactly what Bob is talking about here. It's not just about switching that brain, but it's about actually reigniting the creative forge within you. And you have to reignite the forge. And once you reignite the forge, you have to consume. You have to go out right. there and consume every single thing you can. And I think a part of this also is making sure that you're keeping up whatever practice you have of habitually creating, if that's a daily writing practice, if that's a daily recording practice, whatever that may be. You have to do that with habit every single day, whether you're feeling creative or not, just to kind of keep those juices flowing in terms of the actual habit of making something generally. But me, I do the same thing. I do basically everything you listed. I watch a lot of movies and television. I catch up with friends. I love listening to podcasts and just reading when I have the free time, hanging out with friends and family, just being active, going out there and experiencing the world. And as soon as I get a good round of that in, I'm generally ready to start creating again.
You know, I have to say, you strike me as a less neurotic person than I am. I know we've only recorded a few episodes together and already getting a read. You're a little less neurotic. So I, you know, historically have times where I'm like, well, that's it. Creative juices aren't flowing. I'm done. Time to retire. I'm going to go be a bookseller or something because this is over. And then, of course, it always comes back. But do you have those worries, or are you someone who's like, you just know the creative juices, they're going to start flowing again?
I don't ever worry that the creative juices aren't coming back. And let me just also say that maybe I'm not neurotic in the same ways that you are, but I'm certainly neurotic in other ways. And I would argue that everyone's a little neurotic in some way, even if it doesn't manifest in the same ways, which is easy if you're externally neurotic versus internally neurotic. That's a totally different episode. We won't go into that. But I will say what I find is that creativity goes in cycles. And you know, typically any artist who's doing anything, sometimes they'll take long breaks between pieces of work. And I think what you really have to do is chase the creative passion and see what you are actually passionate about doing next. I think a good example of this is the renowned flautist Andre 3000. You may have heard of him. He was in Outkast for many, many years. He made some classic rap songs. Some people count him amongst their top five best rappers of all time. Recently, he, in 2023, came out with a flute album. A flute album, which nobody really expected, but this man has been playing flute apparently for 10 to 15 years, just learning different types of flutes, enough for him to actually make a whole album. And that's just him chasing his creative passion, because if you heard right. the things that he said about rap, I'm done with that. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't know what I'm going to rap about. And a lot of ways, Isaac, that is the creative juice running out. But he went to a different well, because he's still a creative person. And it just turns out he just needed a new instrument. So I think you have to listen to your passions and don't box yourself in.
That's really good advice. Another thing that Bob is talking about is how technological change has made it more possible to edit things forever. Like forever, forever. And I actually think that's a really interesting point. And that's a problem that has affected a lot of different fields. I remember Dan Coyce, Slate's own Dan Coyce, wrote this great profile of the band Spoon. And I don't know if you're a fan of the band Spoon. They're one of my favorite bands. But Britt Daniel, the frontman, was talking about how Pro Tools is a blessing, but it's also a curse, right? Because you can edit things in this really precise way, but you could also just be trapped in a zone where you're editing forever and really overwork their songs. And frankly, I think that actually kind of did happen to that band. They released two albums in a row that were super overworked and lifeless. And then for their next one, they were like, we're just recording it as close to live as possible, right? And that's their most recent album. Anyway. For writers, editing and revising has never been easier, but obsessing over every little tiny choice will lead not only to lifeless work, but maybe to work that you never actually finish. I mean, if Kevin and Cameron re-edited our working episodes all the time, we'd never put one out, right?
I mean, I think that just lines up with the saying, perfect is the enemy of good, or perfect is the enemy of completion. I don't know. There's some saying about perfection kind of being the obstacle that is really stopping us from getting to a finished point in most of the creative projects that all of us are making. And here's an example. There's a podcast I work on called Leaving the Theater. And literally, it's just me reviewing movies as I'm walking out of the theater. And I'm walking out. People are getting popcorn. You can hear people in the background, all of that. And the whole idea is you're meant to be along with me as I'm walking out of the theater or standing outside the theater. And you're meant to be like standing there with me while I have a conversation about the movie. It's meant to feel like it feels when you're talking with somebody about a movie after you've seen. And I had a particular engineer who was taking out the background noise as we were talking. And I remember I was irritated by that because I'm like, you know, part of this is the imperfection. Part of this right. is the person walking by, the car going by that's distracting any of that. You know, like if we're so busy trying to make studio quality sound for every single thing that we make, we miss kind of the perfection that lies in the imperfect things that come along with sound. Like people talk about all the time when it comes to the fidelity of audio right now, or lossless audio versus MP3, or what a record sounds like when you play it on a record player versus when you play the digital copy that just sounds a little too clean, a little too lifeless. So I think we can't let perfection be the enemy of good or complete. We really have to look at our works and say, what does this project need to be done, and not be so caught up in the fine tuning that we actually miss the point of whatever it is that we're making.
We'll be back with more on the inner critic and editor after this.
Listeners, I just want to remind you that if you're enjoying Working Overtime, please subscribe so that you never miss an episode. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to rate or review the show. It really does help new listeners find us. And if Overcast is your app of choice, please hit the star to recommend the episode to others.
So So the third thing that I was thinking about with Bob's letter is, you know, if you care about your work and you want your work to be good, especially if you're someone who, you know, like me, I'm both a critic and an artist, right? There is going to be a part of your brain that's just running that critic subroutine no matter yes. what.
I love the Star Trek reference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Bob is also right that that part is actually probably very active after you've just finished editing, revising, finalizing a work because you've been leaning on it a bunch, right? But, you know, at the same time, it's kind of impossible to generate a first draft of anything if in your brain you're like, that sentence was shit. You know, right there, you're using too much passive voice. Are you sure these characters are compelling? What's the matter with you? You know, et cetera. Is this something that you struggle with? Because you mentioned toggling back and forth pretty quickly. And if so, if you do struggle with it sometimes, what do you do about it?
There's two options. The first thing is when I feel that happening too much, I put it down and walk away. You put it down, you walk away, you go eat a snack, you take a nap, you watch something else, you hang out with your friends, go for a walk, play some basketball, go see a movie, do anything else rather than what you're doing in front of you. Shift to some other work. And typically you'll find that when you come back to it, as you read it, you'll be able to kind of cradle yourself a little bit better and get out of those I hate myself woods. Because most times that is your brain telling you that you're overwhelmed at the prospect of what you're doing. And you just kind of need to take a step back and really just let it marinate a bit, let it simmer, let it reduce down. And so you can come back to it, actually do some real work. The second thing you could do is hand it to somebody else, hand it to a trusted friend, to a trusted partner, somebody say, read this, is this garbage? Because most times if you hand it to someone you trust, they can literally tell you that the voices inside your head are lying or they're telling the truth. Hey, this is trash, but it would be better if you did this. This is why it's important that it's somebody that you trust. You can't give it to right. your enemies or anybody who already hates your work or anything like that. But if you do one of those two things, finding just separating yourself from the work a bit and coming back to it, I think at that point you can really have some objectivity, some perspective, and actually finish the work.
That's great. I think both of those are really great suggestions. I'm going to add a couple onto that if that's all right.
I love it.
If you're trying to like force it out, that critic voice out of your head, so much of your mental energy is actually going to that. Then, yes. then you're hung up on that. Yes. And then that's really blocking the creativity. You know, the other thing is editors don't like being ignored, whether it's the editor in your head or the editor that you owe a piece to over email or whatever, they don't like being ignored. So here are a couple things I do. One of them is if I'm on a deadline and I don't have time to fuck around with anything other than the piece I'm writing, but I'm having trouble turning that voice off, I listened to music very loudly in my headphones and I literally drowned the voice of the inner editor out.
That's effective.
I have to be careful about what the music is. It probably shouldn't have a lot of lyrics. It's very often a Fish show or a playlist of long Yola Tango guitar jams or krautrock or afropop, right? It's something rhythmic. There's probably like a bit of a drone. The songs are probably anywhere from 8 to 45 minutes long. You know, it's that sort of thing. And that really gets me in the zone and just crowds everything else out of my brain.
I love the choices of music that you have. When you say a Fish show, I mean, you really are just going long form, just, you know, unstructured in order to drown that. It'll drown it right out in that case.
It'll drown it right out. Look, there's a great hour long version of Tweezer from Montana in like 94, 95. It's really going to hit the sweet spot. It's going to drive that shit right out.
I love it. I love it.
Another thing that I do, which I sort of adopted from therapy, honestly, is like, if that's literally a voice in your head, for me, it's literally a voice in my head, you can actually just have a conversation with that voice in your head. You can just be like, hey, look, could you just give me a fucking break? Like, when I'm done writing this for today, then we can talk about it, all right? Because sometimes whatever that voice is trying to tell you actually is helpful. It's just the timing is wrong, right? And then the third thing I do, and again, these are times when the strategies that you're talking about, Ronald, aren't available, right? Because I'm on a deadline or I'm really panicked about getting something done or whatever it is. I just write down whatever the thought is in parentheses and keep going. Right?
Yeah.
So I've acknowledged what I was trying to tell myself. I've left a note to deal with it later. I've spent literally zero energy time on it, fighting it, doing anything, and I could just keep going. So I might be in the middle of a paragraph and then parentheses be like, this is kind of boring, jazz it up, and then just keep writing or whatever it is. Or don't forget to insert that quote here, you know, because it's really worth keeping in mind. The essential thing about generative writing is not writing something good, but writing something just good enough that you can make it better later. Or if worse comes to worse, cannibalize it for parts.
I love that advice. It's something that we do in podcasting as well, where I'm like, blah, blah, blah right here. And then we'll come back to it. And what you find is like in your iterations of making whatever you're making, it'll start to just make sense. It'll start to appear to you. You'll start to be able to pull those good parts out of the bad parts and really assemble something that really works. I think that's great advice.
Amazing. Well, Bob, thank you so much for writing in. Very excited. You mentioned that you have a novella coming out in Isaac Asimov Science Fiction Magazine. Very excited to read that later this year. Thanks again for writing in. That is all the time we have for this week's episode, but let me leave you with one last piece of advice. If I were you, I would follow Working wherever you get your podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode. And if you have ideas for things we could do better, questions you'd like us to address, etc., we would love to hear from you. You can send us an email at working@slate.com or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK.
If you'd like to support what we do, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/workingplus. You'll get bonus content, including exclusive episodes of Slow Burn and Decoder Ring. And you'll be supporting what we do right here on Working.
Thanks, as always, to Working Overtime's producer, Kevin Bendis, and to our series producer, Cameron Drews. We'll be back on Sunday with a brand new episode of Working. And in 2 weeks, we will have another Working Overtime. Until then, get back to work.